So this is Kate Sinclair interviewing Mrs. Kathleen Craig on March 16th, 2005 in her home. So I'll start by asking you if you could tell me your date of birth and where you were born.
Okay. I was born on September 12th, 1922 in Otley, Yorkshire, which is a small market town, a very historic town actually. And I was born in my grandfather's inn, which was the Wheatsheaf Hotel. No longer there, I'm afraid. It's long been demolished, and I don't know what is there now. Probably a department store or something. I have no idea. Because we left there when I was probably around 11, mm-hmm. and moved to Kirkby Overblow, where my grandfather had the Star and Garter Inn, mm-hmm. which was a country inn. He had always wanted to move to the country, and country it was. We only had two streets, a bus once a week on a Saturday, and we were 5 miles from Harrogate, and to go to school I had to cycle to the Lane End and then bus the rest of the way. So I was quite used to getting up at the crack of dawn, and I still am.
And what year did you join the RAF?
In 1940, on my 18th birthday on September 12th.
And you were stationed in Harrogate?
In Air Ministry the whole war, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this is where you met your husband?
Yes, he was stationed with 6th Group Bomber Command, just outside Harrogate. He was at Leeming when I met him. He was station navigation officer there. He had finished his first tour of operations, and he was between tours. Mm. And so I met him in 43, and we were engaged in March 44. And we were married in August 44. That was quite conventional for a wartime marriage, believe me. And after we were married, let me see, no, after we became engaged, not long after, probably around June, July, he went to Canada on a 2-month leave. Mm-hmm. And he came back just in time for our wedding on August the 5th. And we were married in Christchurch Cathedral. No, it's not a cathedral in Harrogate. In Christchurch in Harrogate. I get mixed up because Christchurch Cathedral is where I attend.
Right.
Here, you see. So you know, I told the dean last week that I'd be going to Christchurch all summer, but not here.
Yeah. So you were married in
44, August
and
the 5th.
He was a part of the RCAF, yeah?
Oh, As soon as we were married, he had just arrived back from Canada, mm-hmm. he was sent for his second tour, mm-hmm. to RCAF Station Falthorpe, which was was the home of 420 Squadron, Snowy Owl Squadron, not too far from Linton, which was a very large air base, and so we visited back and forth. Of course, he could still come into Harrogate quite easily. And then in, let me think. And then when Christmas time came, I went to Falthorpe to have spent Christmas with him. Mm-hmm. And the CO heard that another squadron leader's wife, Neil Orchard was his name, and her name was Audrey, and the CO from the station heard that we were going to be alone for Christmas dinner, so he sent a car for us to come have dinner with the squadron, which was very exciting. Mm-hmm. And not only to be with our husbands, but because we were going to have Canadian food. We'd been on rations for so many years, it was kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. And the City of London, Ontario, was the home squadron of 420, the home base of 420 Squadron.
Right.
And they had sent all the food over, including cases of creamed corn, which we were not thrilled about, but the dinner was lovely.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very good time. Yeah.
So when you were first married, he had to leave you to begin with, not very far away from you, but you were separated for the first little while?
Oh, well, you see, I was just in Harrogate, you know, where I was stationed. And I was living in the Claremont Hotel, which was a small hotel that you know, Harrogate, being a spa, has many large and small hotels. Mm-hmm. And the Air Ministry just requisitioned them. So Air Ministry and Ministry of Aircraft Production just requisitioned them for the war. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky. I lived in one hotel and worked in another. So hardly roughed it, except when I went on leave or on a course. No, I was very grateful. And I was very fortunate in that I stayed in Air Ministry for the whole of the war,
mm-hmm.
which is very unusual.
Right.
But I'm not complaining. No.
No.
And then, oh, in the new year, I realized I was pregnant, so you're not allowed to stay in the Air Force in those days once you had learned you were pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for my discharge, and we found half a house at Thalthorpe. And the house was inside the outer perimeter track of Linton, which was this major air base, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to, and then my husband started his second tour.
Right.
And that was very nerve-wracking, because I would watch the 1,000 bomber raids beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And as they came down from the north of England, the squadrons from all around would be joining this 1,000 plane
right.
raid. You know, they were going to Germany,
right.
Berlin, and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So we couldn't telephone in or out of the base once, what station we called it then, not base, once raids were on. So he could never let me know when he'd be home.
Right.
But I pretty well got to know that how long the raid would take. And then I would allow time for interrogation afterwards.
Right.
And then expect to see him home, whatever. So he finished his second tour, and the last trip was the worst, because, you know, once he'd done that, that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And waited and waited and waited and waited. And finally, this little car drove up. It was our little car, but my husband wasn't driving. He was in no condition to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And the crew carried him in, you know, and all laughing. Hello, dear, you know. Oh, that was so funny. And in those days, when they finished a tour, they cut off their tie, and they would just drench them with them. What do you call them? You know, the shaking liquor of them.
Like champagne or?
Yeah, whatever.
Like
whatever
that.
They used. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so... So anyway, that was a huge relief. The rest of the crew were all on their first tour,
mm-hmm.
but my husband was the only one that was finishing his second, so it was sort of a double celebration,
right.
you see.
Right.
That was it. I got to know the crew pretty well. I was the only English wife. They were all married, pretty well all married, I think, but their wives were in Canada.
Right.
And actually... One of their wives used to send me things for now the baby I was now expecting. They all became very interested in, you know.
Right.
They'd be sending me things from Canada, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of fun.
So you found when you were the only male, there were only wife there.
Yeah.
So there were other wives for you to really, I guess, share with the experience of what was going through. Did you have the other men there? Were you welcomed into everything that was happening, or...?
Well, there weren't any other wives there except, well, maybe a few who had married English girls.
Right.
And like this Audrey Orchard, who had married a New Zealand, mm-hmm. New Zealander. No, we pretty well stayed in this. We were so busy all the time. I don't know. The crew were always at our house because
mm-hmm.
it was very close to the airbase.
Okay.
And rationing was pretty strict.
Yeah.
I couldn't cook at all. I'd never learned how to cook. And so they were all teaching me. And as I said before, my husband was always kidding me about the black lace edges were on the eggs that they would find on the black market, you see. They'd scour all the farms in the area, bring home eggs. But it was strange, you know, but we were so used to it after 6 years of war,
mm-hmm.
you know, that we didn't expect too much. That's right,
mm-hmm.
yeah. I remember when I cooked dinner, I'd have to... I'd go to the butcher in the little village and say, can you give me a roast that I can't do any harm to? <You know?
laughs>
And then we'd have to figure out what I could get with our two ration books. You know, just a minuscule little roast, you see, and it would take me all day to cook it. But I managed, and then the first time I did that, actually, they didn't come for dinner. Ops were on, and they couldn't let me know they weren't coming. I was never so upset as I was when I had to chuck that away.
Yeah.
But, you know, they were exciting times.
Yeah.
And then on May the 8th, I think it was, when VE Day came, we were all pretty wound up, so we all piled into our little car. Freddie and I had this little car. How we all got in that car, I'll never know. No, and by now I was well pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And we toured the countryside. We went out to Cotswold and visited the Mouse Man, this famous carver who carved a little mouse on each of his pieces. And then we did a little more touring. Then got back to Linton, which was our adjoining base, and people were in the tower shooting off very lights, and all hell was breaking loose. You know, everybody was celebrating.
Right.
So I don't remember too much about the rest of that day. It was just a kind of a wild day, but it was exciting, and not so much probably as it would be in London when I see pictures of, you know, the area outside Buckingham Palace,
right,
thronged with thousands of people.
Right.
We were just, weren't
small,
too many.
Yeah, yes.
But we still had a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a huge relief to have it over.
Right.
You know. Well, then, my husband was supposed to then go to the Far East.
Right.
Because, you know, the war with Japan was still on. And so, he said, I think we'd better book your passage to Canada. But I said, oh, no, I'm not going where I don't know anybody. I'll wait till you come back from the Far East, you see. Well, he never did go there because by the time... Oh, he had to leave... Let me see now. Our son was born June 15th, and he had to leave 6 weeks after that.
Mm-hmm.
So he did get to see our first baby.
Right.
And then he had to leave for Canada with a view to going to the Far East, you see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when the war with Japan was over in August... He said, we'd better get your passage booked to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So we did, but by that time, the rush was on to get all the troops home.
Right.
So I had to wait until August 1946, to come to Canada.
Oh.
Which was hard then, you know, but it gave me a chance, too, to see all my old friends who'd been away during the war, all people I'd been to school with and had been in services and had been all over the world, really. And so I seem to be saying goodbye to people forever for those months.
And your husband went before you then?
Oh, yes.
So you were...
Tony was born June 15th. He was 6 weeks old when my husband left. That would be the end of July.
Right.
But it was a year later when I came over in August 46, you see.
Mm-hmm.
He came back in 45. And he came to Halifax to be camp commandant at... Halifax Station, not base. And when I did come over, I came on the Queen Mary, which was very fortunate for me, but it was a very rough crossing.
Right.
And it was horribly rough. And even though it's August, and everybody seemed to be sick except for me. And I landed in, I can't remember, I think it was the 11th or the 12th of August, and my husband was waiting on the dock. So, you know, that was pretty lucky, because a lot of English wives had to travel way across the country.
Yes, yeah.
But he was stationed right there.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I know my uncle, who was my godfather, merchant marine oil tanker captain, said to me, Halifax, Kathleen, you'll be home in a month. But you see, all he knew of it was, I suppose, the dock area.
Right.
In wartime. Halifax was pretty sad-looking in those days, especially around the Barrington Street area.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, I'm told it's just beautiful with boutiques and things, you see. But, Freddie, it didn't really bother me, because I'd come from a country with old buildings. That never bothered me.
Right.
And he drove me out to visit our friends, the Vincents, who had... A room only, because housing forever after the war was just impossible. Mm-hmm. And so their landlady had found us an adjacent room where we could stay for 12 days until the two families, the Vincents and the Craigs, left for this long trip across Canada to see our husband's folks, you see.
Right.
So there was no Trans-Canada Trail in those, Trans-Canada Highway in those days. We had to drive down to the United States and go clear across the northern states.
Mm-hmm.
When we got to North Dakota, we headed up north to Winnipeg, and there we said goodbye to the Vincents. That was their hometown.
Mm-hmm.
We carried on by train to Calgary,
mm-hmm.
and then south to Vulcan, my husband's hometown. And we spent about a week there, and then, let's see, my little son was very nervous about seeing his father, this great big man, who my husband was very tall, big man, and he was hiding around my skirt the whole time. He kept saying, "I don't like that man, Mommy, don't like that man, Mommy." But anyway, you know, he gradually got out of that. He just hadn't been used to having a man in his life for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And so we stayed there for about a week, and things were settling down. But I actually found that trip of 7 days in a car absolutely horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not used to those distances in England.
No.
And so we came back to Winnipeg, picked up the Vincents in Winnipeg, and then we left once again in 41 Chrysler. We left for the return journey to Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
And we stayed over one day in Detroit, I think, because Harry wasn't completely satisfied with the way the car was behaving. It was a 41 Chrysler, but it had been up on blocks throughout the war.
Right.
So we had the car checked over, and then the next day we resumed our journey. Got to Sandusky, Ohio. We were approaching Sandusky when the brakes failed.
Right.
And I was map reading in the back seat, and Harry was driving, and my husband and little boy were asleep in the back seat with me, and their baby in a bassinet in the front seat, and Harry's wife, Lena, they were in the front seat, and they were all asleep. I was awake because I was map reading, and
mm-hmm.
I remember saying to Harry, "We turn right at the next intersection, Harry." And then he just sort of yelled suddenly, "Oh, my God, the brakes have failed." And we hit a 7-ton trailer track head-on and spun us around, and a car coming from the other direction hit us from the back.
Oh.
And we were folded up to the cab.
Right.
I have pictures of that accident today, and I simply can't believe how we survived it. But Harry, I was pinned by the steering wheel. And next thing he was just hanging out of the car door like this. And his wife, I think she had a fractured pelvic bone. She was badly hurt, and their baby actually had a fractured skull.
Oh, yeah.
And the bassinet saved him a bit, but he recovered.
Mm-hmm.
He's a major in the Air Force to this day. So he recovered okay.
He recovered.
But we in the back seat were all thrown out of the car. I went out the furthest, and I hit my eyebrow on the front seat as I went. That was before seatbelts, you see.
Yes.
And I went out, and when I was thrown out, my baby landed on the back of my neck and jammed my forehead into the gravel.
Oh.
But it broke his fall.
Mm-hmm.
He was fine. He didn't have a scratch on him. But my husband was sitting on the seat. I'd gone beyond the seat.
Right.
He was between the car and me.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a huge gash in his head.
Mm.
And he was completely dazed. He was just out of it. And I had amnesia for nearly a day. And he couldn't understand what had happened and why we were all sitting in the middle of nowhere. Well, ambulances and police converged, and it took us to the nearby hospital, which was just a small cottage hospital run by nuns. They couldn't believe all these people were coming in all at once. And so they asked Freddie and I to sit with our baby in a waiting room. The others were taken off to the dormitories right away because they were so badly hurt.
Right.
And we were stitched up. And we were told that Lena and Harry would not be leaving hospital for days, maybe weeks. And actually, they did stay there for many weeks. Yeah. But we were assured that they were okay. They didn't have room for us because right after our accident, another huge accident had happened at the same intersection. Mm-hmm. There were prisoners in the back of a truck, and they'd all been shackled together.
Right.
And they had quite a few fatalities. Mm-hmm. So these poor nuns out of the blue had to cope with all this disaster. So they asked me if they thought we could manage it. They sent us down in a taxi to the local hotel, who had agreed to take us overnight. So after we were stitched up, we were sent to this hotel. But I called at the service station to see if it was anything left of our luggage. Precious little. And so then we stayed there overnight, and the next day we went back to the hospital to see how Harry and Lena were doing, but they were still in very bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to leave because Freddie had to get back to on duty, you see,
right.
In Halifax.
Yeah.
So the hospital booked us onto a train, couldn't get a sleeper. We had to sit up all night with our heads all bandaged.
Oh.
And we had telephoned Freddie's aunt in Boston. She lived in Marblehead, Massachusetts, but she met us at the Boston station and drove us out to her home. And we stayed there for two or three days just to recover,
yep.
You know. But our faces were black and blue. We were a mess. Mm-hmm. So then from there we went back to Halifax, and we actually stayed in the Vincent room for a short time. And then a few weeks later when they came back, we then tried to find a place. And we'd find a place, and we'd have to move into the hotel. Then another, it just went on like that. We were back and forth from rooms to hotels. You couldn't find anything to rent. And that went on until we were posted to Greenwood, I think was the next place, yes. And once again, the nearest accommodation we could find was 18 miles away in Waterloo. But it was an apartment, actually, and a rented one. We couldn't have furniture in those days because, Air Force weren't moving you in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You just had to find furnished accommodation wherever you went post-war, immediately post-war. So we found this rented apartment, and Freddie's aunt and uncle, whom he hadn't seen since he was a little boy, because Freddie's ancestors had come from Nova Scotia, so there were quite a few relatives in the area. So they taught me how to cook. They were pretty shocked that I didn't know how to cook. And anyway, I'll always be grateful that his uncle taught me how to cook steak, and I've always been glad about that. I was in a cast iron frying pan, by the way. And then we were there for 1 year, and then we went to Summerside, Prince Edward Island, for 3 months. Freddie was in charge of the cadet camp there, summer camp, and Prince Edward Island, before he went to staff college the following fall.
Mm-hmm.
So in Summerside, we rented a cottage on the beach. By now, I was pregnant with my third child, who was going to be arriving in the end of August. If I got this all right in sequence. One of Freddie's elderly relatives, she wasn't elderly. She lived with her elderly mother, and she agreed to come and look after our two older children when I flew to Halifax to have the baby.
Aww.
The hospital in Summerside then was very small.
Mm.
And how small it was, we sold them our fridge. we bought a fridge there. And so I flew to Halifax. Freddie had gone to Toronto by this stage, end of August. I flew to Halifax to have the baby. And some old friends in Halifax, Bill and Dorothy Dennis, picked me up, and I was to stay with them for a week. But later that evening, they had to rush me to hospital, and the baby came that day, I'd flown over there.
Oh, wow.
And in those days, the doctors kept one in hospital for a week
mm-hmm.
after baby. So I was there for a week. Then when the week was up, I took a taxi from the hospital to the airport, flew back to Summerside, the lady looking after my children announced she had to get back on the plane, which I had just arrived on, that she had to go. Her elderly mother was quite sick. So I took a taxi to the cottage and telephoned my husband in Toronto. What am I going to do now? He said, well, get in touch with the base, the station at Summerside, and they'll be able to help you. So they did. They sent two young airmen who helped me pack, and because I had to leave within 2 weeks for Toronto, for staff college. And we had been advertising for a place to rent in Toronto for 3 weeks before this. Right. But when I arrived in Toronto by train with the children, we still had no reply.
Oh.
But Freddie had arranged with a fellow from staff college that we could rent this cottage at Barrie, which is 60 miles north of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a summer cottage on Lake Simcoe. So we stayed there. It was a log cabin, very drafty, with all sorts of mice and rats around, which I was kind of nervous about, you know, with a baby. And most of the summer cottages had by that time gone back to Toronto. But within a month, we found a place in Toronto, on Algonquin Island, one of the Toronto islands.
Mm-hmm.
We had to pay 6 months' rent in advance so she could winterize it. It had just a summer cottage up to this point. In fact, we used to have little pools of ice under our beds every morning. You know, because it was fairly primitive by today's standards. And we had to leave our car on the Toronto side because cars were not allowed on the island.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we really quite enjoyed living on the island. And Freddie could only come home on weekends because, you know, staff college is pretty intensive.
Right.
The following Christmas, let me see, New Year's, we said, well, we have to go to the New Year's Eve ball. So we're all set to go, and we got a babysitter, and a little panel van ran the length of the islands from Ward's Island through them all up to Hanlon's Point.
Mm-hmm.
And there you've got a little ferry over to the mainland. So we got on the little panel van along with other people going out to celebrate. And when we got to Hanlon's Point, they told us that the lake was just too rough and it wouldn't be running that night.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the people in the van said, well, I have a key to the yacht club at Ward's Island, so why don't we all go there? So we did. And it was unheated. We danced to records in our fur coats, snowshoes, and long dresses. But we had a very good time. And, you know, we got used to sort of roughing it. Things were always happening in that way in those post-war years. And so then by summer, or spring, I suppose, we went, where was that, 1450. Oh, we were posted to Rockcliffe, RCF station, Rockcliffe, Ottawa. Once again, we had to pay a year's rent in advance to get a house.
Mm-hmm.
But we finally had a house. It was in a little house at the bottom of Acacia Avenue in Rockcliffe.
Was this a furnished house still?
No.
You were allowed to get some furniture?
Well, it was partly furnished.
Ah.
But we had started now to... We were starting to pick up a few things, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go to the various auction sales and I bought a nice large painting at one point, you know, and that sort of thing. And we spent a year in that house, and then we were able to get on Marriott Quarters, PMQs on the station, Rockcliffe, which was a great relief financially, I can tell you. And then we had a year in PMQs.
Was on the PMQs, was it like a community?
Yes.
You got to meet a lot
on
of
the station,
people.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
Be around people that were experiencing the same
thing. The same sort of thing. We're all going through the same thing.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice. Finally, we were on a station, you know, not just pillar to post everywhere, living like gypsies, you see. And also, the only things that we'd had suitable for entertaining was this tea chest full of wedding presents that I'd brought with me when I first came to Canada. And it just could make... Because anything we had to take with us in our car, you see.
Right.
So, let's see. From Rockcliffe, we were posted to Winnipeg in 51. And Winnipeg, Freddie went out to run the number 2 air navigation school for NATO, which was just opening up. And so he had to go early, and then I joined him and by this time we had PMQs in Winnipeg too, which was really nice. That's when we bought our dining room suite. Finally, we have a house. And we had 3 years there in that one house. The first time we'd had 3 years anywhere.
Oh, wow. And was this the place that you had to hold teas, and there was not a lot of dishes and things?
Yes,
that you had to clean?
That's right. Because he'd gone out to open this station, and a new mess had been built.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they'd spent so much money on the mess, they hadn't anything left for the accoutrements, you see. And so we had cadets arriving every 3 weeks. They came for a 9-month course, and they would come every 3 weeks. A new course would start every 3 weeks,
right,
you see, and would graduate every 3 weeks. So we had to have a visiting VIP for each graduation ceremony, then the tea. And so the mess manager was new to the job, as was I. And so, but we managed. I would round up silver and anything else we needed to decorate tables from all my friends for every 3 weeks. And I would attend every ceremony, of course. I especially felt bad. I would have felt bad if I hadn't gone, because only 10% of the cadets were from Canada, and the other 90% were from all the NATO countries, you see.
Right.
So they didn't have relatives who could attend.
Right.
So I always felt obliged to go. And
you were required to go, but you enjoyed
yes,
to go.
I enjoyed it, but absolutely. And so there, let's see. In Winnipeg, okay, that's when I met Wing Commander Roblin. We were in a receiving line when we first arrived, and Freddie was president of the mess committee then. So we were in this receiving line, and I was next to the air commodore, and I heard people being announced, and I heard this voice saying, "Wing Commander Roblin." They were coming down. I thought, "Roblin? I know that name." When he got down to me, he said, "Harrogate!" You see, we had a big hug, and he had worked in Amnesty, mm-hmm, in Harrogate during the war.
Oh, wow.
We hadn't known each other beyond business,
right,
but it, I guess to
we
see
had
a,
that common.
We had that,
yeah,
so familiar face, you see. He said, "What are you doing here?" And goes, so then, and the air commodore said, "How do you know Wing Commander Roblin?" I said, "Oh, he worked in Amnesty when I did during the war." And that's all I could say. I had no idea who he was at that time.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And because the air commodore said, "Well, he's an MLA, you know." I said, "Oh, okay." And so anyway, he waited for me after the receiving line was over. And from then on, he came to our house fairly often, you know, and
yeah,
had dinner and so on. He wasn't married then. He married after we left Winnipeg.
Oh.
But for 3 years, we saw him quite a bit. And so it was kind of fun to see someone from home,
mm-hmm,
even though he was Canadian.
Right.
And I remember Dale Commodore saying to me, "He's a future Prime Minister of Canada, you know." And I said, "Really? I had no idea he was in politics." Anyway, I agree with that. Dale Problem was a super guy.
Mm.
So anyway, let me think. From
Where
there,
did you go after Winnipeg?
After Winnipeg, we went to back to Ottawa, to headquarters.
Right.
And Freddie worked for a Commodore, Claire Annis.
Mm-hmm.
And we were at headquarters for 4 years. Really, we had a good 4 years there. We bought an old house with very little down, so we were always broke there. But we couldn't find a place large enough for our family unless we bought one.
Mm-hmm.
The two-bedroom apartments were no good for five. How many children did we have then? Yes, we had 5 children by then, I think. And we got this big old house with 2 lots, and it was quite near a beach on the Ottawa River. What is now part of the driveway. I wish we'd been able to hang on to that house. We'd been made for life financially. But as I say, it was an old house when we bought it, And we spent our whole time there painting it, fixing it up. Oh, but it had a lovely garden. I knew it had 800 tulips in the garden. An old English gardener had had it before us, and he really had a lovely garden. Mm. And, of course, I was able to take the children swimming all the time. For years, the residents at the little beach at the bottom of our street would bring out rocks so that it was a nice little sandy beach, but most people couldn't see it because of the high bank.
Wow.
And just we who lived in that little area knew about it, you see. So it was really quite a little private beach, just lovely. And so everybody was very happy, and most of the neighborhood children in those days always came to our yard to play. We'd built this huge sandbox, and there were some very happy years there. Then from 54 to 58.
Mm-hmm.
So from there we went to Trenton, which was quite our best posting in Canada. It really is a wonderful city. It's a pre-war station, you know.
Oh, really?
Yes, and so the officers' quarters were sumptuous by our standards. Mm-hmm. You know, we are in the senior officers' homes on the south side of the station. There were sort of about 9 houses in quite a large circle. You weren't on top of each other. You were quite a distance between each house.
Mm-hmm.
But the swimming pool was in front of their commodore's house, which was near the officer's mess, and we were about 2 houses down, and in the back of the circle was a tennis court, so we were able to play tennis, and we did quite a lot. And I had played tennis all my life, and so had Freddie, and we played doubles, and we played singles too, you know, for on station teams.
Were you, while you were in Trenton, is this where you met Barbara Lane?
Yes, well, the Lanes came the year before we left. But I think we had met them during the war.
Hmm.
But we'd never been stationed together until Trenton, you see. And our children were much the same age there, too. So, mm-hmm. we've known their children since those days.
Yeah.
And Barbara and I, both Yorkshire girls, have always had that soft spot, you know. And then let me see what else happened. In Trenton, the children absolutely adored Trenton. That's when I bought my own horse, and we started this riding school on the station for the Air Force, not just children, for them and for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, because I had my own, we bought a few horses for general use, and we rented them out at very nominal cost, mm-hmm. you know, and I taught the children the elementary riding, and a Royal Army Service Corps officer who was stationed there, Lieutenant Hale, I think his name was, he taught them jumping. So we had excellent trails. So that was really a very nice episode. I'm trying to remember what else about Trenton. My husband was a chief administrative officer there, and so he was quite busy all the time. And we always had people arriving or going from Trenton, being the major base in eastern Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And so when people had visited the PNE in Toronto, they would often stop by. And the Royal Marine Band came in particular one time. And Freddie brought home the Colonel Vivian Dunn. And so he came home for dinner, and we talked music quite a bit, and it was very nice to see him. Years later, we saw him again when we were in Paris at the British Embassy, when he came over there with the Marine Band. But another person that I was quite delighted to meet was Freddie brought home Johnny Johnson. I'm not sure whether he was group captain or a commodore then, I can't remember. But he had been one of the World War II Battle of Britain heroes. And when I was a WAF, when I was a young WAF,
mm-hmm.
we had posters on our walls of all our heroes, you see. And he was always my favorite. He was the best looking, too. And so when Freddie brought him home, I thought, oh, don't believe it. Johnny Johnson is in my living room. Anyway, so he and Freddie would both tease me about, of course my husband had to tell him about my posters, you see. And so, they teased me about it, but he really was fun. We enjoyed that visit.
You did a lot of socializing then in Trenton, a lot of people visiting.
Yeah, visit always. You never knew who was going to come. Another time he brought, he telephoned and said, the Queen is visiting the Governor General Massey. I think it's that, was it Coburg or Port Hope? Just somewhere 50 or 60 miles away. And the Queen is going to be visiting the Governor General. And we are delegated to look after one of the Queen's lady in waiting, because the other one has gone with the Queen. Lady Edgerton had the weekend off. So she told Frederick she would like to visit a Canadian home, so he brought her home.
Oh.
Unfortunately, that I had been painting all week. I'd resumed my art career, and I'd been painting in a sort of a dump in Kingston all that week, and I kept shucking off my shoes, and I got poison ivy on the bottom soles of my feet.
Oh.
So I had just arrived home when Frederick telephoned to say he was bringing this lady home. I couldn't get my shoes on. The feet were so swollen. I had to cut slits down the side of my old running shoes. So when they came, somehow I managed to get to dinner. And when they arrived at the door, I met her, and I was sort of saying, "I'm sorry about my shoes." And she said, "Oh, good, then I can kick." And she literally kicked her shoes off. They went flying across the hall, and she walked into the living room and just plunked right down on her chest to me and said, "Oh, first time I've relaxed in weeks." So we had a really good time with her, you know. And I had this painting that I'd been working on, sitting on an easel in the dining room. It was wet because I'd been painting it for the last few weeks. And she said, before she left, she said, "I would like to buy that painting." I said, at first I thought, I'm not supposed to sell things to the Queen's lady. I said, "Well, you could have it, but it's not even dry." And she said, "It doesn't matter." She said, "You can send it to me at Buckingham Palace when it's dry." And I didn't know what to say. I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't take money from you for it. I'm sorry, but I will send it to you when it's done." It was an abstract palette knife painting of sumac bushes in Ontario, which are very colorful, you know.
Yeah.
And so she with that, she reached in her purse and she just plunked this large amount of money down on the table and said, "Well then, you are being tiresome. Give that to your favorite charity." And so my husband just scooped it up saying, "Well, I'm her favorite charity." And anyway, she was a real breath of fresh air, completely unpretentious. And we had a really good time. She really set my husband down one time. He said, "Where are you going from here, Lady Edgerton?" She said, "Well, I think we're going to Summerside, Prince Edward Island, where the Royal Yacht will be picking us up." And so my husband, thinking he would be telling her something, said, "Well, you know, that's the home of our Fathers of Confederation." And she looked at him with a little half smile, and she said, "My grandfather was Lord Durham." Oh, touche, you know. But anyway, it was quite an experience, believe me. And so that was that part. But we did a lot of charity work there. We have First Wives. We ran the local thrift shop, you know, and the money went to charity. And a lot of poor people in Trenton in those days, I don't know what it's like nowadays. And if the people would come in with children, couldn't afford things, we would just give them whatever they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt that we really pulled our weight there. And the other thing was that we met the mayor of Trenton, Jim McDonald, and his wife, Reen, were wonderful public-spirited citizens. They often came to our mess, and Jim was in charge of the local cadet corps and the sea cadet.
Mm-hmm.
And they had five boys. And so our boys met them at cadets. You see, our boys became cadets too. And so we've been friends to this day. In fact, Reen visited me here last year.
Oh.
And but Jim died a few years ago, unfortunately. And he was mayor of Trenton by acclamation 9 times.
Oh, wow.
That's how popular he was.
Oh.
He ran the local hardware store, but was such a public-spirited citizen that after he died, they named the McDonald Bridge at Trenton after him.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So we're very proud of him for that. Mm. So those were two of our special friends whom we met there. Mm. Then from there we went to our next posting. We had 4 wonderful years in Trenton. Then we were posted to Paris.
Right.
To SHAPE. SHAPE is Supreme Headquarters, Allied Powers in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And there, I think there were probably only about 16 officers at SHAPE, Canadian officers, as I remember. I could be wrong on that, but it seems to me that's about what it was. So they hardly ever saw each other, except for monthly meetings,
right.
You know. But Freddie went to be chief of the alert cell in our operations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he'd have to report to General Lemnitzer if planes crossed the Iron Curtain. And, you know, it was a very tense time.
Yeah, definitely.
Plus, it was the time of the Algerian problem with France, you know, because France was giving up and was leaving Algiers, and
right.
We had plastic bombs blowing up all over the place, and
yeah.
You had to be very careful not to leave your car parked in certain parts of eastern Paris, so you'd find all your tires flat when you got out of the car. You know, it was just a time to be careful.
Right. Did
you know?
Husband have an escort or anything like that at that time?
No.
No,
where we were, you see, where we lived, at Marais Marly, which was quite near to SHAPE village, it was close to Versailles,
mm-hmm.
on the western end, and mm-hmm. that wasn't the area where all this
right.
was going on.
Right.
The eastern parts of Paris were. And so from, let's see, is it time up now?
No, not yet. I'm just making sure the case flipped
okay. And we rented a house, Marais Marly, a little village close to SHAPE. It was on top of one of the hills